Hello, Fife fans. Welcome back to Scotland's premier Fife-based podcast, Fife Club, where a few friends get together and talk about anything and everything that takes their interest, putting their world to rights. What's the first rule of Fife Club, James, you cunt?
Talk about the Fife Club, you bastard. It's good.
We're getting fighty already.
You're not supposed to do this, coach. This is we're pointing at the wrong enemy.
Right. But Lizzie, your enemy. What were you saying?
I can't mind. Doesn't matter.
Mark, what were you saying?
I thought James was going to laugh and Iron Brew was going to go up his nostril.
Can you see? I can't even see you.
Right. So, once now we've got that over and done with, we've got a special episode for you this time round. We're all bored of COVID and lockdowns, so instead, we will talk about something new, intriguing, mysterious, uplifting, downheartening, a bit sad, and downright fucking batshit. That's right, this is a Tiger King special.
Tiger King!
We are Fife Club.
Yep.
Carol Baskins.
So, what is it she says?
Oh, hi there, all you.
Cats and kittens or something.
Yeah.
This is Carol from Big Cat Rescue. And today, the cats have been eating their dinner like real good kitty cats. Past my dead husband's grave.
Right.
Let's
not talk about it anymore. We'll get into this. Okay.
But there's so much to talk about.
We should do a
spoiler warning in the.
Oh yeah.
If you have not seen the entire series of Tiger King, go away and watch the entire series, and then come back and listen to this, because we will be talking about every aspect of it in great detail.
And it's on Netflix.
It's worth. It's 100% worth Netflix fee for the 2 days it'll take you to watch all the episodes.
Right, Mark.
Don't be a loser like Jamie and watch it.
Lizzie.
I also think it might be worth just pointing out that any opinions expressed on this podcast are purely our own and we have no legal basis for it whatsoever. And it's just for entertainment purposes.
For fun. Dave.
Carol Baskin's a murderer.
So, as you can tell, we've got almost a full house here, so we're going to do things a little differently to normal so it doesn't get too confusing. We'll see how that goes. But we've all got things to say except for Jamie, because as we've discussed, he's too much of a bloody hipster wanker to watch the one program the rest of the world has watched. Fucking hipstery gin whiskey drinking making. Anyway, I suppose I'll just get on with the introductions and move things along. On the socially distanced mics through the power of Skype with my good self Kutch tonight is a lady like Kellogg's Cornflakes because she's great. It's our Lizzie.
Hiya!
And somewhere else in the world is a woman with the eye of the tiger. It's Mags.
I can't help only having one eye. If my one eye was as good as a tiger, I wouldn't bang. But I'm fucking short sighted in that one as well. Not the eye of a tiger. It's fucking useless.
You can't even see yourself. Shit.
Oh, I got more mileage out of that than I thought I would.
I genuinely, I can't breathe. I cannot breathe. And now all for the benefit of the listeners, all we can currently see is Margaret Hall's one eye because she's sitting so close to her camera.
I'm not sure if it's her tiger eye or her dud
the
eye.
The eye of the tiger on you, all. That's what it is.
That's the one.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway.
Can I just say, I think that's officially the best intro we've ever had on any podcast ever.
Well, a short walk away from her is a man with the eyes of a hawk. It's James.
Hello. Oh, that's a good one.
And further down the road in Dunfermline Town. And further down the road in Dunfermline Town is the man with the strength of a bear. It's Dave. And in his own gaff, someone with the speed of a puma. It's Mark.
Hey! None of you are getting the Bravestar reference.
Oh, Mark, yes, thank you.
I'm totally lost on that. I just thought you were just being, you just put a really funny one for Megan. Everybody else was normal.
No, I did also have, what's the other one? I had one for Jamie, which is, what was it? Eyes of the Hawk.
Ears of the Wolf.
Ears of the Wolf, that was it. Strength of the Bear.
Yeah.
Speed of the Puma. Bravestar.
What is this reference we're not getting? Sorry.
It's a 90s cartoon.
No, okay.
Ah, well.
Yeah. Although that's I fine. Will allow you to watch cartoons in the 90s because you were children then, sort of. As opposed to now, being just adults watching cartoons. Fucking weird.
No, it's not. It's great. Anyway, I thought I'd go with that because, you know, we're talking about essentially people that own wild, dangerous animals as pets, including tigers, pumas, lions, all that sort of shit.
I think they're personally known as idiots.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not sure. I think that's a technical term.
Yeah. So I think, well, what are you going to say, Lizzie?
I was just going to go with fucking weirdos is what I would refer to them as. But
so,
you know, same.
I think this is where it brings me into my first question that I'm going to ask you guys. Owning big cats as pets in a collection is fucking wrong, yes?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Mark?
Nah.
In one way, this is one of the only ways that I actually agree with Carol Baskin, even though she's a massive hypocrite.
And a marginal cats.
Yeah. Lizzie?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Yeah, no, I'm fully in agreement. I'm just going to play my resident plant-based, not quite vegan person card here and say I completely agree with you.
Fair enough. James, your opinions?
No, I totally agree. I'm on the same boat as it is. A very dark, dark world that we're going to dive into in this episode, especially, not before we even get into the podcast, but the whole big cat ownership. There's more tigers in captivity in Texas than there are in the wild.
That's insane.
That's absolutely bananas. So, and you know what, we'll talk about other stuff into it as well, but this whole thing wasn't even supposed to be about big cats in the first place. This was supposed to be a totally different documentary.
Yeah.
And this happened by the happiest of coincidences because some guy rocked up with a snow leopard in Texas, which is bonkers in itself.
Mags, you've got your finger up. What's your opinion?
So I did think that was interesting because at points when they were interviewing the owners, they would go back to the justification that by having big cats and having people coming to see the big cats, people were getting closer to nature and that they would learn about wildlife and they would learn about protecting habitats and stuff like that. But they seem to do fuck all else to protect the Amazon or to protect their habitats. They rolled that out as an excuse. Now, I don't know if that was edited that way or whatever, but there is a certain, I'm not totally anti-zoos. I think there's a role for zoos where they're doing research and there's a role for zoos doing education purposes. And there's an element of truth that if you have a place where you can go and meet animals, it makes you more interested. You know, it sparks kids' imagination and they can go on to do stuff like that. But these places, they kind of understood the theory behind it, but they just didn't follow through on it at all. Mm-hmm. It was just a total money-making,
just a reason to have big cats, yeah. Yeah. Dave, what's your opinions on owning big wild animals? I imagine you're probably fine with it.
I'm all right with it.
Yeah.
You want it, you get it. I think it's fair enough.
Yeah.
Sticking to that. No, seriously. It's, as James was saying, there's around about 8,000 big cats being kept in the US. And, well, I say big cats, there's around about 8,000 tigers alone being kept in the US. There's around about 3,890 tigers in the wild. So the figures just don't add up at all. And the fact that they try and justify it by saying we're trying to teach people about the breed themselves and about what these big cats have gone through and all this sort of shit. And you get people that try and cover it up by running big cat rescue sanctuaries. And all they're doing is profiteering out of everybody else because they've rescued these cats and they charge people to come in and see these cats anyway. So all they're doing is saving money in the first place by not buying big cats. So if you want a big cat, you're a cunt. There you go.
Yeah.
That's my view.
Sounds good. Lizzie, you got something else to say?
Yeah, to be honest, when you asked me that question at the start, I didn't realise you'd actually started asking the question, so I didn't really give my proper answer.
All right, I see. No. I said, well, I'll start with my first question then.
Sorry about that. Sorry, I'm a bit excited.
Right, so what's your answer?
Yeah, my echo's back, isn't it?
No, it's fine.
Okay, sorry, echo's fine. Yeah, I was just going on from what you were saying about the number of cats that are in America. I did a bit of reading, preparation. Mm-hmm. So there's 7 states in America where there are absolutely no restrictions whatsoever on the private ownership of exotic species, and obviously what you class as an exotic species is a different thing. And on top of the 7 states that have nothing at all, there's another 8 that have semi-banned little bits of it, but basically you can still do it. But there are, however, significant restrictions throughout the whole of America on the breeding and selling of big cats. However, that is absolutely the whole premise of this entire setup that all these people had. It was about breeding so that people could handle. So not only are we dealing with a country that doesn't have proper laws, even when it does have laws, they're not in any way enforced. Mm-hmm. Like, they advertise this as come and hang out with a baby cat, like a baby tiger.
Yeah.
Well, how the fuck did they get that if they haven't bred it? So
that's
a whole number of legal issues.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing is that, you know, what is it? Mostly it's not legal to buy and sell like exotic animals, and yet but ownership's fine and people end up with them, but nobody's looking into how they end up with them. Mm, it's, you know, it's, yeah, that sort of, like, there's just something so corrupt and so wrong about the whole thing. It's mental. Mark.
And it's not just the US as well. I know we're talking about Tiger King, but if you think about it, like, it was 1976, I think, the Wild Animals Act. Somebody will tell me if I'm wrong. But you used to be able to buy, like, leopards and lions in Harrods in London.
What?
Like, their exotic pet store was like a fucking zoo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely mad. You're like, yeah, I'll just have a couch, and oh yeah, I'll have a leopard as well. As well, yeah. But then, absolutely mad.
That's why they reckon that there are, like, there's still big cat sightings and stuff like that across the UK, is because of, you know, people that had private collections that just let them go. And that some of them are dogs and some of them are big domestic really cats. But, like, you know, they do reckon that some of the sightings are probably genuinely big cats. Yeah, Mark.
When you say let them go, you don't mean let them get fat.
So, just let them get fat.
Yeah, that
be in quarantine.
Sick of this quarantine, I'm going to eat all the Jaffa cakes. Yeah, all right, lad.
Yeah. Right. We'll go to the next question. Right, so next question. Carol absolutely fed Dawn to the tigers. We agree, right? Lizzie.
100%.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mark.
I'm unsure. Of the two theories about Carol fed her husband to the tigers, or Carol put him in the, was it the sewage tank?
Oh, yeah. Septic tank.
I actually think septic tank is more believable for some reason. I don't know why. I think that puts me in the same category as Doc Antle.
But the thing is,
There's a question coming up about him soon.
The thing with the septic tank is there would have been evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're probably definitely all in agreement, as is the rest of the world, that she definitely killed her husband.
Yeah.
But the, what she did with him, you know, there would have been evidence of that. And Joe Exotic talked about how tigers, when they eat, when they chew bone,
mm-hmm.
basically do completely obliterate it all. Now, I'm not a tiger expert or a big cat expert for that matter of fact, but even like domestic cats can chew through a chicken leg and there'd be no evidence of it after.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it probably is quite likely that even in their excrement, there wouldn't be any evidence of them.
Mm.
Whereas they would have found them in a septic tank. So I'm all about the feeding them to the tigers
option. Yeah, I think I'm just going to go with the batshit option. Dave?
A tiger wouldn't necessarily eat bone. That'd be the only thing.
All right.
So, because they tend to just tear flesh from fleshy bits and leave the rest to rot. And yeah, the pigs, you'd be sorted. I think apparently, I don't know. I think the septic tank option is probably a good shout, because what's in there would apparently break up a human body. Again, I'm no expert. I've never fed anyone to anything.
Maybe she fed the flesh. She fed the flesh to the tigers and then chucked the bones
in the septic tank. Yeah, possibly, Mags.
Because.
Well, just the girls, they didn't go looking, though. This is the thing. Like, they barely did an investigation.
Yeah.
Her brother was in the police. So, like, she could have done any one of these things. And although they were asking questions, by the sounds of it, they never, like, actively went in there and checked what was being fed to the tigers. So, like, their bones could still be kicking about in a tiger cage somewhere. Like, I don't know.
Mark.
Yeah, I agree so hard with that. They didn't do enough of an investigation. That's my point. That's my bigger point. It could be any manner of these things. But yeah, hard agree, Mags.
So the thing that I found interesting was when they had a clip of her like in the 90s being interviewed about it, and then they had a clip of her, and I can't remember what she said, but she used the exact same
wording. It was word for word.
She totally memorized that and used it. Like, you don't remember that much, like, if it just happens naturally. She would have been all distressed and upset, but she memorized it word for word, which is like, she's fucking rehearsed that, definitely.
Yeah.
She repeated the same three words, or the same word three times, sorry, because it was like, yeah, be gone, 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 or something like that. It was like,
James.
Early, that was it not? He was getting up that early.
Yeah.
Like, what?
So, next question for y'all. My God, they all love meth. Discuss. Dave.
Aye, those, like, tombstone teeth. It was just like that when his, well, when the husband, who you later found out was the husband, showed up on screen, I was like, this is going to be interesting. I thought he was a hillbilly. Then it was like, holy shit, it just developed from there. And it was just like, I couldn't come to terms with any of their mouths. Like, what the fuck's going on here? Oh, aye. Yeah.
Yeah, Mark. Plastic,
for the purposes of like clarity, I think we're talking about Joe Exotic's first husband, John Finley.
Yeah.
There.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we are.
Just to clarify. Although...
Church.
What was that?
Who doesn't own a shirt?
Yeah, he doesn't.
I love the fact he'd chosen to be interviewed shirtless throughout the whole thing.
For all seven episodes.
No shirt at all, no.
And the other thing is, there were times, now, I appreciate I maybe look at teeth more than your average Joe. See what I did there. But there were times in that when there was footage of John wandering around like the park doing his job, and he was wearing a denture. Right?
Was he?
He was wearing a denture.
Huh.
He had teeth. Then for the interviews, he just thought the denture was not necessary for the face to face camera pieces.
But then he was just wanting to show how much, you know, he's been fucked up.
Well, I mean, when you say he's been fucked up, right? So, meth mouth is an actual diagnosis.
Oh, yeah.
It's not slang,
no.
It's meth mouth. It's what people who take crystal meth have, all of them. It has been widened out now to, we use meth mouse to describe various different all drug-related type situations. Literally, within 5 seconds of the first episode starting, mm-hmm. I had started shouting, meth mouth! Meth mouth! I think the crystal meth use was not revealed for quite some time, but I knew they were on that stuff straight away. Yeah.
So what is it? What is? Can you explain a little bit more about meth mouth to us? Why do their teeth fall out?
So it's a combination of lifestyle factors that go along with that kind of drug use, which is why you also see it in people who are heroin users as well. So lifestyle, I mean, to be honest, when you're taking meth, you're not that bothered about how much sugar you're consuming, mm-hmm. how regularly you're eating, or how regularly you're performing oral hygiene. But also it's to do with blood supply, healing capacity. They tend to lose their teeth from gum disease rather than holes in them. Also, kind of makes you a wee bit aggressive. Mm. So, lose front teeth. People also, you know, shoot themselves in the face and stuff, which is also a hindrance for keeping one's teeth. So all in all, it's a number of factors that combine together to give you what is clinically known as
meth mouth. Mark, any opinions on meth mouth?
Any opinions on crystal meth? Yeah, sure. not one for me, I've got to say, kids. Don't do crystal meth. It was interesting the way that, like, you do know drug use is going on throughout the whole of this thing. Like, just about all of the characters, there's, like, at least a vague bit. There's one or two, like, the headkeeper, John Rinke, and I want to say her name was Safi. His name, sorry.
Saf. I think it's their name, actually.
Is it their name? Sorry.
It's their name.
Pronoun use there. But yeah, like, those two didn't look particularly on meth.
No.
But pretty much everyone else did.
Oh, yeah.
they weren't missing teeth. They were just missing limbs.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Although I love how they keep...
Really interesting observation, though, because I noticed that as well. There were two people in that program who didn't appear to have the same lifestyle factors. They had them of their own. I think that was the key. They probably had their own things that they were going through, that, because I think Ricky had a sort of an alcohol problem, didn't he? So, it was interesting. I thought the person who lost their arm was a really interesting character. Really, really interesting. And I'd really like to know more about that, because I think there was so much more to that person's situation than what we got from that programme.
Yeah. It was the bit footage with when she lost her arm. Holy shit. That was grim. But I do kind of like how they kept Rinky's story back a couple of episodes, where they just let you see him running around on his prosthetic limbs, making you just think that it was the tigers that did that as well. And then they went into the story about Saf losing her arm, or their arm, and then again you were left sort of thinking, is that how he lost his legs? But then they eventually decided to tell that. There was a wee bit of sneaky suspense storytelling going on, but I think that happened throughout the whole thing. It was kind of what kept you kept you going. James, what you got to say about it?
Just to jump on the back of all of that, isn't anyone else find it really a bit weird that, like, Safa and Rinky, out of all the people that we see in this program, are the closest thing to normal people on the show? it's really odd, but you hit the nail on the head. Like, there's the thing that I found interesting about Safa is that, despite this happening, like she said, we went to the hospital, and she said her hand was working fine. They're like, oh, she gave this thing a sign, and then they chopped my hand off and I was back at work. Now, I want to know what she signed. Was that supposed to be like something she couldn't sue them for? Or was that the hospital thing that she signed?
I think they were checking whether it was working or not.
Yeah.
Because that is also something that skimmed over in the programme. They, a lot of the discussion says a tiger bit an arm off, a tiger ate an arm, that kind of stuff. The tiger clearly didn't, because the surgeon reattached that arm.
Yeah.
It was like they said they could repair it, but it would take several months for it to heal.
It would take years.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
I don't
take years.
Understand how a tiger took a person's arm in its mouth,
mm-hmm.
bit it off, and then the surgeons were able to reattach that.
So I think they did actually go in and say,
issue.
Yeah, I think they did go in and say that it wasn't, it hadn't been completely, it was torn and shredded. Yeah.
Okay.
My take of it was that they could fix it, but it was going to take several years, and it would, what they didn't get was the fact that the massive hospital bill that it would have required. I think there's an issue around healthcare in the States.
Yeah.
And basically, they could have saved that arm if she had the money to pay for it.
Yeah.
And they clearly didn't have the money to pay for it. And well, it's like, oh, well, we're just going to have to chop it off then.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he was never going to financially recover from that.
No.
That was one of the most horrific bits. Program. You have a member of your team, which he referred to as his family.
Mm-hmm.
So a member of his family was literally dying out there. And he was in floods of tears. And I was like, this poor man feels for these people. And then he just said, I'm never going to financially recover from this.
It wasn't just that, though. When he walks into like the gift shop, and it's like, this is what's happened. So do you guys want to do a rain check? Or do you want a refund? Like, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
I wrote down the exact word to use to explain the situation what happened. Oh, off my bit of paper. It was something on the lines of, sorry, would you like a rain check? They've just had their arm ripped off by a tiger. Oh, here it is.
And it was like, those people clearly hadn't seen it. They didn't know.
What the hell did he do? As he's asking about refunds.
He didn't offer them a refund in the first place. First of all, he asked them if he wanted the rain check. Oh, there we go. Joe tells visitors to go home because, in brackets, a tiger just tore her arm off. And that was just after he'd said, great. I'm never going to financially recover from this.
Great so, PR management there.
Yeah. Clearly evident.
So, gonna move on. Again, this is something that I just want to an opinion on from everybody. Joe burnt the studio down because he got scared of Rick Kirkman's power over him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think, well, it's not the other theory. It was like Kirk burned it down himself.
Nah. I don't think so. Kirkman was going to make tons of money out of that.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
There's no reason he would have done that.
I think the footage that they got in the lawyer's office was pretty damning. Like, he was clearly scared and angry when he realised that the lawyer was like, oh, he owns all the footage. You can't have any of that. He's totally in his rights to do that. That was pretty damning, because then all of a sudden it went up in fire.
Lizzie.
So that, for me, was the start of where I started to feel some... sympathy is not the word.
Sexual feelings.
A burning in your loins.
Okay, I'm going to go with sympathy. That to me was the point at which I started to become acutely aware of the fact that Joe was just being massively manipulated by a huge collection of people. And that this was a man who is lacking in a number of ways,
mm-hmm.
and I suspect has significant childhood or adolescent trauma
mm-hmm.
that's being played upon. I think that lawyer, who we then heard from in later episodes, was probably quite significant in the whole process of Joe being exploited. And I'm not saying that Joe is not without fault. Lots of issues there, but I think that interview for me was the first time when I thought, hang on, this dude, there's people impacting on his life to such an extent. I think he probably was involved with the burning down of that studio, but I don't think he'd have thought of that himself.
Hmm. Well, I think, was it not the lawyer's like last words kind of said something that maybe put that suggestion in his head.
He told him to do it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Dave, did you have something
said,
to say?
Well, if it was all to disappear, where is all the footage? And Joe said, in the office. And the guy said, well, I mean, if something was to happen to the office, someone would lose.
Yeah, as you know what you've got to do. That was kind of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Dave.
The bit that got me as well, that made me sort of go, it was Joe, was when he was talking to camera after it, and he's standing in the burnt out shell of the building, and he takes himself three times to correct the words that he's saying, to explain about how the crocodiles were boiled alive. And he wasn't able to get the words right, so he kept on correcting himself to make it sound as like angry as possible. Yeah. And it was like, if you're actually angry about it, you would just depress yourself and not try and correct yourself. So, he did it. Of course he fucking did. Yeah.
James?
Something else just kind of also bring up about this is like, we're talking about a man whose ego was far bigger than his bank balance as well.
Yeah.
This is, that I'd imagine would play a factor. Again, he's trying to cover his tracks as we're talking about as well. Again, this is a man who went for governor, president. He's trying to run his own like YouTube channel, spending millions to get it going. Which is why I thought it was a bit weird, like millions of dollars have went, literally millions of dollars have went into making this YouTube show that only made like a couple of hundred views, a couple of thousand views per episode, and then it's all burnt down. Even more interestingly, like we talked about this bit in the group chat, because Val put up the meme where it's like, how come we've watched so much of the footage anyway from the back of that? But then something that I realised was that this documentary was made over the process of 5 years.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder what was on that tape or on all those recordings that he was like, nah, we need to get rid of this.
Probably even severe animal cruelty.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe something the documentary didn't get as much of, but I think the other show, like probably because they were there all the time, it probably captured a hell of a lot of the shit that was going on. Mark.
Yeah, I think Rick is one of the most interesting characters in the whole lot of the thing. Just watching his beat, it's like there's definitely an evil eye of the media aspect about Rick.
Yeah.
He's watching this absolute car crash of a man's life unfold in front of him and know at the end of the day that he's going to be able to coin it in whilst doing it. It's like such the seedy side of like reality TV. And again, totally another person exploiting Joe Exotic. Although, as we all say, Joe's not a good parent, so he's not a good person.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's interesting. But when we were talking about Rick making loads of money off it, is he really? Like, because he's going to spend all his money on fags. Really?
And I was astounded by that man's ability to consume nicotine-based products. And I have been very successful at that myself in the past. Highly successful. But I don't know how he has a larynx with which to speak.
I thought he sounded identical to Hunter S. Thompson. I was loving that. There's definitely smacks of him in there. He was a proper character. But it's like you say, Pem, and he was kind of... And he admitted it himself freely that he was wanting to take advantage of this character and make millions out of him. Yeah. He was the meal ticket.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow. It's just so many different aspects to him. This guy's horrible.
Yeah, it's why I don't think that he did it, because he had so much. He was going to retire on that. That was going to be big money. It would, if that had made their ways, that would have been massive. And Joe Exotic would have been massive in a different way. But it would have been like, what's his face? Steve Irwin, of a sort, that kind of explosion and then downfall through a reality show. Lizzie?
Of course it would have been massive, because we're talking about just another version of what he was trying to make.
Yeah.
all that Netflix have done is gone in and picked up.
Yeah, they've. But although, again, that guy, the guy that's made it, he totally wasn't there to make that documentary. The documentary he went out to make, I think, has just spawned arms and legs, and he's ended up with this absolute batshit, like, tale of, yeah, like, organized crime, murder plots, bigamy, like, oh, the whole lot, you know, drug abuse. It's mad, just mad.
What we have all watched is a reality documentary about the making of a reality TV show about a reality situation.
Yeah.
It's like reality TV show inside TV show inside even very Joe's meta little TV show that he had.
Yeah,
it's all like watching meta. A mirror in a mirror in a mirror. It's mental. Mm-hmm.
Wait, are you suggesting that we're watching the Hamlet of Netflix documentaries just now?
Yeah, that sums up quite well.
Definitely know the plot of Hamlet.
Play is the thing to turn a meme out of the king.
Right, going to move on from that one because I think this one's going to be interesting. What's that?
Can we talk about the arrangements?
Well, I'm going to talk about Dr. Antle's. His zoo is a cult, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely a cult. Mark.
From the very beginning, can we not refer to this man as Dr. fucking anything? Because a doctor of mystical science from the Chinese School of Medicine is not a doctor. I also read something that his real name is Kevin.
I refuse to admit that.
What's that, Dave?
His real name is Mahamayavi Bhagavan, and we need to refer to him as such.
That was the name that he got at the yoga centre that he lived at in the 70s. His name was Kevin.
I've done a lot of reading today to try and find out what that man's fucking real name is, and it does appear that he was born what Dave has just said.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. But I also read that his real name is Kevin, which I prefer to use. So from now on, I'm going to call him Kev Antler.
Kev Antler.
Who is sex trafficking, committing acts of sex with people who were definitely underage, although I don't know what the age of consent is in Oklahoma. 100% running a modern slavery outfit. Like, that man is the root of all evil in the world of animal and human, predominantly female exploitation in the US. End of.
Mark.
And he had the fucking elephant they would ride in on his ride in on the elephant and then demand sexual favors from all of you.
Yeah. Can we all just agree he definitely has a micro penis?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Holy.
Mags.
My favorite thing was when they were, like, the first couple of episodes when they saw him, he was, like, directing the camera, but they cut it so that you saw it.
Yes.
So we'd be like, oh, okay, so I think you're going to get a really good shot here. Okay, 3, 2, 1. I'm on my sofa with all these clients. And then he changed when he caught, like, the camera. It was so well cut, those bits. It made, like, right from the start, you were like, oh, this guy's a massive cunt, isn't he?
Yeah, they painted that picture very quickly. There's a lot of clever storytelling going on with the way it's been edited. I did enjoy it, but yeah, like they had the lass who'd broken away, talking about like all these, you know, all these arrangements and his practices and how he gets you know, all these young women in, and it's purely the cats and the cubs, and that's how he pulls them in. And
he changes their name.
Yeah.
That was the point when it was like, oh, this guy's running a cult. Like, that's a classic cult move. Get people to change their name, because then, if you take away their name, you take away their identity. Like, a complete control move over them.
He might as well have called them Of Bhagavan, or whatever his name was.
James.
Yeah, this is like a common thread between almost everyone you interact with in this program as well, with Doc Antle, Jeff Lowe, Joe Exotic, Carol fucking Baskin, like they all have this influence where they can like they bring them in with the big cats, and then they just totally. It's almost like a cult. It's scary how like how much influence they have over people just by having these cats, to the point where like someone like Carol doesn't even know the volunteers that come in and work for her.
Mm.
She has like hundreds of volunteers. Yeah. And she won't even pick up on a single name of any of them.
Yeah.
You've got Doc Arnold who pick his volunteers
her and her tier system
by like how
as well.
They look and their age. Yeah. You have Doc Arnold pick his volunteers by age, by the look. And then you've got Joe Exotic who'll feed them meth and marry them. It's weird. It's weird how they've got that weird sort of hold on people and how easy it is to do that.
It's weird how much I'd definitely go for Joe Exotic's place over any of the others.
Yes.
Death and Tigers, you know. The rest of them, that guy Doc Antle's not my type. I'm his.
Mark.
Yeah, like... I mean, it's difficult to compare the level of exploitation amongst them, all of them. Like, obviously, there's Carol Baskin's exploiting, like, people's desire to do good for wildlife and, like, that very virtuous thing that she's exploiting it to make millions out of her art. You've got Doc Antle exploiting it for women to have sex with him because he's a fucking freak. And then you have Joe Exotic turning straight men gay to marry him.
Legend.
Not turning them gay, like... getting straight men to marry him and then still having sex with them.
Yeah.
You know, in a scenario that I'm not a prude about domestic arrangements, let me just say, like, whatever your family looks like, that's cool with me. But I don't understand the three-man marriage that two of the men are.
It was truly bizarre as it started, going on, like, explaining it all. It was just like, wait, what? So they are straight? And the what? Mad. Lizzie.
I think if we put aside the fact that two of the men who worked for Joe ended up being his husband very quickly, that little bit aside, I think for me, and this is where my sympathiser of Joe Exotic comes in again, to some extent, oh, I don't know. I don't know how to say this without it sounding terrible. The people did, and this is a question, it's not my opinion, it's genuinely a question. Did Joe give a home and a work to people who would otherwise have been in the jail? Yes, exploited them in the process, for sure, gave them terrible living conditions, paid them fuck all, but potentially put them in some kind of family and inverted commas environment. Whereas the likes of Doc Antle actually physically and emotionally exploited women in particular. Maybe I feel differently about this as a woman speaking. I don't know. I just feel there's something potentially different about Joe's side of things if you take out the fact that he also had sex with straight men.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mark?
They all got Bobby that they didn't want. At the end of the day. But also, there's a really interesting question, like too deep for this podcast while we're laughing at meth and tigers and shit. But there is a thing like, you know, sexual predators very often prey on young men, young disillusioned men. And this is basically kind of what Joe Exotic's done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's bad on both counts, but there is sort of an almost calling card of predators going for young, disillusioned men.
Yeah. James?
You've kind of hit the nail on the head what I was going to say, Mark, to be honest with you. But, like, people in that kind of financial situation, they've got the ability to do whatever they want, or they feel like they want to do whatever they want for that there. I think a big difference with Joe is a lot of his satisfaction came from his fame and his popularity. That makes any sense. Like he was more invested in becoming an entertainer and being a recognized personality than you see someone more in clothes like Doc Antle, who's only really doing it for his own sexual enjoyment. Yeah. Jeff Lowe is much the same. So you can kind of mix it up between how they are. It doesn't really make it any better how he's acted towards these people. But he does, you're right in that, Lizzie, in saying that he has given these people who otherwise wouldn't have anything, some kind of purpose and life to work with, even if he's feeding them meth and
it's a modern slavery
process. No, it is.
But they were all doing that. And I think I think the motivation was probably different. I think Jock Antle was in it to get his hole every day, yes. all day. Mm-hmm. That was his entire motivation. I think Joe was more about forming a relationship. He wanted people to love him.
Yeah.
It was about a need for acceptance and a need for love in whatever form it came. Jock Antle didn't give a fuck. He loved himself enough. And I actually don't think everybody said that Joe's ego was bigger than his bank balance. I don't think Joe's ego was what people was what he expressed it as.
Mm-hmm.
It was he was this constant need for love and reassurance.
Yeah.
And I think his reasoning for exploitation was probably different, not that it makes it any better.
No. But yeah. I think there's the yeah, moments throughout the whole thing. Where I think you said it earlier is that you do start to feel sorry for him because he is absolutely being exploited, and you can see at every turn, especially when Jeff Lowe comes along, and you know, you can just see him slowly pulling the zoo away from him, and it's just like. It's the one big thing in his life is the zoo, whether it's right or wrong or not. That you know, that's but, and it just starts, you know, and you do start to feel a bit like, oh, you know, just nothing's gone right for him. I don't think, and you know, there's just so many people that.
Well, there was an interesting thing. I can't remember if it was from the Tiger King or if it was from the Louis Theroux documentary that they'd done on the GW zoo. But it's a really, really good thing about it was like at the beginning, Joe was very passionate about the tigers, making sure that he was looking after them, raising them, making sure they were safe. But then as time went on, he was becoming a lot more distracted and a lot less passionate about the tigers, brought on by all this stuff, you know, the fame, the magic stuff, the country music, having people pay money to come and see the tigers, and he's the star of the show, even though, you know, tigers, man. So this is a man who slowly but surely fell out of love with tigers, or at least fell out of love with them to the degree where he's not shown them the care that he did. Whereas you've got all these people that he's brought in who are there for to me, it got the impression they were there more for the tigers and doing what they could to help them and keep them going as best they could in these cages, for lack of a better term. You know, there was more in it for him to get other people to help out with that and for them to be the people helping out, if that makes sense. Like he could go off and do his own things while other people were looking after the tigers and the farm.
Mags.
Yeah, I mean, I think was the saddest thing about the whole thing for me wasn't Joe being exploited or other people being exploited. The thing that really hit me was the end of the final episode where it really summed that up. And he obviously realised far too late when he was in jail, speaking from jail, he admitted himself that he had totally lost interest in the animals. He'd lost interest in the conservation side of things, and he realised far too late.
Mm-hmm.
And he was obviously having a big, tragic realisation moment in that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, you're right, when you saw that footage of him from like back in the 80s and the early 90s when he was sitting up, and he obviously was originally passionate about the animals, it's like when he was totally became completely unrecognisable. But I mean, I don't think the whole what's his face, the guy that took the zoo off him and things like that. It's hard. I find it hard to feel sorry for Joe in those circumstances because he'd taken his eye off the ball. He'd lost interest in the zoo. It was all about his race for governor, race for president, stuff like that. That had got him into and the constant feud with Carole Baskin that had got him into the financial position where he couldn't keep the zoo anymore. So I think I didn't really feel sorry for him at that bit.
Yeah, Dave.
I was going to say it seems that the documentary kind of played it quite. A biased approach to the fact that it was showing Joe Exotic as being a victim of his own insecurity. Mm. It kept on showing him as being this like poor downtrodden bloke, whereas the reality is he was making a fucking fortune out of this.
Yeah.
Because he was able to carry on fighting these court battles and doing all this kind of mad shit he was wanting to go and do, including pouring millions into his own ego.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day as well, the full reality is he aimed to kill someone, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then that was something I was explored in it as well, that he was embezzling a lot of Jeff's money as well in his governor run. So that So there might, you're totally right, 100%, but I think there is something to it where, like, he's not using his own money to make his own gains here. He's trying to, you know, make as much money as he can by spending as little as possible. Yeah. So, like, invest, taking more money out of the zoo and what have you, and zoo.
Right. Going to move on. Is Howard Baskin ready for the Tigers next?
Please, yes.
He was a weird one. I couldn't work out if he was completely being exploited by Carroll, or if he fully knew what he was getting himself into and was the quiet, you know, he was like the quiet but controlling man behind the scenes. I don't know. I would love to know more about him and have seen more of him, because I think there was more going on there than we could when we realised.
Yeah, because from the sound of, like, her previous relationship, and, you know, I don't know, he just was a poor fool with a bit of money behind him and a bit of sort of savvy that stood beside her, so she was happy to let him, you know, do all that, or is he pulling the strings behind the scenes? You know what? Yeah, you're right. It's weird, Mark.
That bit when they kiss on the camera is so weird.
So
fucking weird. It's like people who have never kissed before in their life kissing on camera. It's so fucking weird that, like, honestly, like, my body, like, shook with, like, creeped outness. I don't know. And I was like, I don't know which one of you is the worst, but I know that both of you potentially eat children.
It was when he serenaded her as well out of nowhere.
Oh, that was awkward. Awkward as fuck.
What was that?
Yeah. Oh, man. Dave.
The
wedding photos when he was dressed up as a tiger and she had him on a leash.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was a fucking wedding.
Yeah. Dave.
I would pull a funny face if I knew that I was kissing a murderer. That's kind of it. Like, he knows what she's done, and he is now living the life with her, with the millions that she's made from her missing husband, presumed dead. And it's just like, he knows what she's done. Like, because who in their right fucking mind would marry that woman? Like, I was desperate for her to be eaten by a tiger for the entire length of that fucking documentary. I was gutted that she lived. That's me next, isn't it? I'm next on the list.
I'm 100% in your camp. I wanted a tiger to jump out while she was on her bike. Maybe her bike is like a tiger. Like, and they just get mauled. Like,
yeah.
Also, can we talk about the fact that she cycled like she'd only just learned how to ride a bike?
Yeah. You say a tiger. Did you want Alan Glover to throw the tiger at her?
I think there's two things to remember about Carol and Howard Baskin. First of all, she got 90% of the settlement from when her husband died, disappeared, whatever, 90% of his estate. In fact, she got 100%, but she kindly gave 10% to his daughters so that they would stop talking about the fact that she fed him to the tigers. So she had 90% of that. And his estimated worth, if you look on the internet, ranges between $17 and $20 million. So, I mean, she's not a poor woman. Secondly, Howard Baskin is a criminal lawyer. Just, you know, I think she's paid him to be her husband.
It's not impossible.
She's got her own sex slave right there. Just like Kev Antler, right? Just like him and
Jeff Lowe.
Trying to call him a different name, which is the guy that runs Amazon, and it's not right.
Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Lowe. He's got his sex slaves.
Bezos probably has. Yeah.
Okay, I was trying to avoid saying his name in case we get sued.
Having that chat going, you know what really turns me on? Covering up my ex-husband's murder.
Can we not talk about anybody or anything turning Carol Baskin on?
Right. Well, I'm going to move on. So we've kind of covered this a little bit, but I was going to say, what was his name? Dylan. Dylan Passage. He was groomed, right?
I don't know, though, because that relationship seems a lot more genuine. I mean, he was groomed, for sure.
Mm.
Yes.
But then, you know, they're still together. And Joe's been in prison for 18 months now. And that lad is still there. He could have left.
Mm.
So, and it's not like Joe has any money anymore, so he's not there for that. I think he probably was groomed, but I think it was... I don't think Dylan is a straight man. Unlike Joe's two previous husbands were straightforward heterosexual men.
James.
Can we kind of go back a little bit? I feel like we skipped about a lot of chat about Travis.
Yeah, I just think that was
kind of went straight from nothing to that, because that was a big part of the story as well, where Travis, you know, his sort of relationship with Joe just went downhill ever since they got married, like the tensions about that and how he wasn't, it was almost like he was fighting for Joe's affection, especially in that time he was starting to make himself a little bit bigger, and it led to his death. And what I'm trying to say is we should totally talk about Travis's funeral.
Oh my god! Travis's funeral was just.
I can't.
I mean, I've got to say that the whole bit where, like, I mean, did he kill himself?
Yeah, he shot himself in front of the.
Right. Okay. I know he did, but did he mean to, or was it an accident?
No, it was a blank. It was a blank. It was in there.
Well, was it?
He'd taken the cartridge out of the gun, but when you take a cartridge out of an automatic weapon, it still has a bullet left in it,
yeah.
Like the one that's loaded and ready to go. There's discussion that he was playing around and he said he didn't. He was like, no, I can't shoot myself with this. But whether that was a genuine suicide or not, I think is difficult to know. That boy was really, really fucked up.
And I think
for a lot of reasons and a lot more than we saw in that program.
Mm.
He'd been a meth addict since he was a young teenager.
Mm-hmm.
He was also, interestingly, brought in by, was it Rick, the guy who was making the reality TV program?
Yeah.
Mm. He introduced, according to online sources, so maybe bollocks, he introduced Joe and Travis.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know,
he seemed like a very a sad guy.
Really sad boy.
Mm.
And you know what? I really upset me. There were a few points where I think the documentary crossed over into being explicit of itself. And when they were interviewing his mum, she was clearly a very troubled woman as well. Yeah. And was not, I don't think, in a fit state to be interviewed. And they were interviewing her. And I felt really uncomfortable about that.
Yeah, I remember thinking the same.
There was no need for them to use that footage of the lad who was Joe's campaign manager, which we're also going to need to talk about at some point.
Oh, yeah.
No need for them to use that footage of that poor guy watching somebody shoot himself in the
head. Yeah, I don't know what they were trying to get out of that. Really.
Well, they're trying to get what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
It was a jaw on the floor moment. The fact they were showing that, I was like, "What the fuck?" But it was very, it wasn't right, really.
There are a few jaw on the floor moments. There was that one. The other one came towards the end as well, when they were struggling to feed the tigers. They weren't getting much food in, and they showed an image of one of the cages just rammed with tigers running around gutting, and that actually, like, that was probably the only moment that actually made me well up, like, throughout the whole thing, I was just like, that's fucking wrong.
I found all the footage as it went on, where they were showing how the zoo itself or the park itself had deteriorated. I found all that when the tigers were running around in mud, when the guys were desperately trying to big drainage channels and stuff. I find that really upsetting. But I think there was, to some extent, a need to show that, because they were showing what was happening to the animals. But I find that really emotional.
Something else that was quite scary is like when it got to that point, how easy it was for Joe to like sell them on. He was like, oh, I could sell these for like $2,000. Yeah. It's easy. It's like without even a thought.
The bit when he was sitting hauling the cub out of the pen, that was harrowing as well. And it was all just about the cubs coming so that they could make money out of them. And I think for a lot of it, you didn't get to see that side, or you got to see less of the potential animal cruelty side of it, because it was more about the Exotic Joe show and everything around the people involved. But then they started, towards those last few episodes, going further into actually, you know, there was animals, just wild, you know, animals that should be wild animals, just in awful conditions and being treated like money-making meat, basically.
Yeah, well, it's almost like poetic, as like Joe's sort of publicity went downhill, so did the park.
Yeah.
It was almost like a sort of imagery of how things had gone.
When people stopped caring, he stopped caring. That was kind of it. That was the kind of running theme throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed to be that as things started to slide, everything started to slide in the park too. And it was like the fact that it started to actually show images from within the park, that, because I mean, it was that Nick Kirkman guy, he was saying the whole, sorry, Rick, he was saying the whole way through it that if the footage had been able to exist that was burned in the studio fire, that it would have just painted Joe Exotic in a pretty bad light, is how he put it.
Yeah.
So obviously it was just what was actually going on within the park, you know, with the fact they were feeding bloody offcuts from the Walmart van to the fucking tigers. And it's just, the whole thing was just mad, really, when it was getting to that stage. And it was just like, how they weren't closed down is beyond
me. America in itself.
Yeah, that's it. Just a lack of restriction when it comes to actually dealing with things in a serious manner.
Yeah, it is. that whole side of it was fucking mental. Like, and like I say, those scenes were where it kind of started to properly, like, yeah, these people are all bastards. You know, that's kind of what it came to. Going to move on to my next question. I've got a couple more. Mark, you got something to say?
No, if you're moving on, Cash, that sounds fine.
Fair enough. Was Joe framed?
So, has anybody seen the Chris Morris film? Their Day Shall Come or something? His most recent one that's set in the States?
I've not, But okay, it's supposed to be interesting.
What's that? Well, basically, the plot of that story is what happens in here. Like, I don't think Joe was framed as such, but they clearly, law enforcement had set out to get a conviction, and they did what they needed to do to get that conviction that they wanted to do. And I think he was very open to, like, he obviously talked all the time about killing Carol Baskin. Whether he would have actually gone ahead and done with it, and done it or not, it's hard to know. But he put material out there that said he was going to do that. He spoke in a way that made it clear he was going to do that. It only took a little bit of money and chatting to the right people to get it on record that he was going to do that. And in the States, that's enough for a conviction. Whether it's, you know, right or not is a whole other question. But basically, that the Chris Morris film is about
people hanging themselves.
Terrorism.
People hanging themselves, basically.
Well, it's about domestic terrorism in the States, where the agencies set up people so that they can then get the conviction, because they need to get a certain number of convictions, so they go out and do it. But yeah, people put themselves in a situation where it's easy for the authorities to do that.
Yeah, because they brought in an agent for that, eh? Actually, unless they brought in an agent who kind of framed him to push him in that direction of that train of thought, mental.
Yeah, Lizzie.
So I think this whole situation is just another example of, and it's just what Max was saying really, about finding the easiest person to exploit. The likes of Jeff Lowe and the guy that they brought in.
Alan Glover.
No, well, Alan Glover was the hitman dude. Oh no, sorry, that jet ski man, yeah.
James Garrison.
Yeah.
James Garrison, that's who it is. And he clearly had a number of things. The police had a number of things on him already.
Mm-hmm.
Then, so he started off. Then Jeff obviously got done for battering one of his many partners in Vegas. And he has no charges against him for that, because he then got involved with dealing what was actually, if you take the murder for hire thing out of it, what they were trying to do was frame somebody for something that the public had a problem with in terms of the animal cruelty. And I just think they took the easiest person and the person that they had all that stuff on and just basically paid criminals, other people with massive amounts of criminal activity, to get involved with it. There was definitely money exchanging hands, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was just about not doing Jeff Lowe for battering his wife. I think they probably paid them and all. And all the stuff with Carol and the copyright infringement and all that kind of stuff with Joe, you know, all these people, what they really needed to be doing was taking the fucking animals away.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
That should have been their priority, was getting those animals from all of these people and putting them somewhere safe. And nobody at any point made any attempt to do that.
Yeah.
They just wanted a high profile face that people laugh at to be done for some kind of charge. I don't doubt that at some point, Joe Exotic gave somebody money and said, go and kill Carol Baskin. But I think he was probably encouraged by a whole number of people to do that. And they should all be accountable for that situation.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
Very quickly, James. Before James, I was just going to say, I think that it was just a case of when they pushed this idea that you had willing people in the background in Jeff. Alan Glover, ready, and the fat weirdo of James, what's his name?
Right,
I think we're all basically, as soon as this idea came into their head, it was like they were all desperate to just make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were not going to kill her or anything like that. They were just doing enough to get him on tape.
Yeah, to get rid of him. Yeah. James?
I think something we need to dive into as well is his relationship with Alan Glover. That this is the guy he paid... Well, allegedly paid to go over to Florida and try to kill Carol Baskin, which is really bizarre in itself. But like, but then he didn't like, they didn't get along at all.
Sorry.
Sorry, I just put a messenger.
Lol. Yes. Lol. Lizzie, what are you saying?
I'm so lost. I can't.
I said we can't read that message out. But
no,
I didn't see it.
Some number of amusement. It's in the chat, but I don't know if it'll mean a lot to you, James. But
yeah, you carry on, James.
Yeah, sorry, James. Carry on.
In the chat,
mute their mics, guys, if they're having private side banter.
But I think it's worth having a chat about how his relationship with Alan Glover, because like, they didn't get along whatsoever. It seems a tad odd that he just happened to like hire this guy to do this hit, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that's...
Like, the argument being that he'd rather than paying Alan Glover to go and kill this person, he just paid him to go away.
Mm.
That was the sort of debate they're having. Is like, did he actually pay him to pay this, or did he just tell him to fuck off because he didn't want him to be there?
Mm. Yeah, see, Dave.
That's the thing, is Joe Exotic clearly had a lot of dodgy connections around the whole of America. He's been selling tiger cubs and all this sort of shit, so he's going to know some fucking weird people, and people are into all sorts of mad shit, including, what was he called, Tabrau, the Mexican ex-drug lord?
Oh, God, yeah.
He's going to know some connections.
Drugs inside snakes, yes.
And that's the thing, apparently, Tony Montoya, the guy from Buddy Scarface, is based on that guy.
On him, yeah.
So, yeah, so, and this guy got away with so much shit, and he was just like, well, they couldn't prove I cut someone's head off. I mean, it had just been there, and that's how he got his appeal through in the end. Anyway,
yeah.
So,
what was it? That's Mario Tabrau, wasn't it?
That was the one, yeah. Mario Tabrau. So,
Tabrau.
Joe Exotic knows people like him who are proper hardcore ex-gangsters. Why on earth would he go to somebody that he doesn't like, who he doesn't get on with, and go, I'll give you $3,000 if you go and kill this person. $5,000, sorry. You only ever got three, which you repeated 17 times.
Mark.
Andy just spent it all in Vegas.
Yeah.
Mark.
Well, the one thing that we are sort of forgetting there is that that is very rational that he would go to Mario rather than going to Alan Glover. But I think we should also not forget like the sort of wild card factor of meth.
Oh, cheeky meth.
Although I have to be honest, I don't think Joe had half the meth problem that most of the people he was giving the meth to did.
Yeah.
But that's how dealers work, isn't it? You're less addicted than the people you're selling to. So
exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Because Joe had teeth, and they weren't all just like fake teeth. Joe had his own teeth, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get high on your own supply.
You totally don't. So I'm probably going to come to my last question. Because
it's taken
of time.
Us like an hour and a half before you even actually spoke about the attempted murder. It's
well,
much like the documentary that took like six episodes to get to this.
Really,
point.
The point.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, we've kind of. Yeah, it's in there, but I'm just going to ask a question, and I think we've kind of covered it. But Jeff Lowe is an utter scumbag. Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Any man who wears a bandana for a continuous point of like, he wears a bandana. He's a fucking scumbag.
Lizzie.
Also, can I just point out that the entirety of his interviews in episode 6 and 7, he was in the fucking bath! In the bath! In a bubble bath for his interviews.
Was he?
We talked about the fact John didn't have a shirt on and had no teeth. Jeff Lahore did his interviews in a fucking bubble bath.
You know what? I didn't even notice that.
I don't know. He does. Promise.
I'll need to go back and check that. I was clearly just too engrossed in you're a shit man. Mark.
Also, Jeff Lowe was clearly punching with his wife.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Oh, yeah.
Wives,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
It's the bit where, like.
His, punching his wives, not punching Bob.
Yeah.
It was the bit where, like, Jeff had, like, hired someone to work in the park. But what he was actually doing was hiring his replacement for his currently pregnant wife in front of his wife.
Yeah.
What was that?
Oh, that was the nanny. Yeah.
He was hiring a nanny, and he based it on the fact that like, women he thought was the hottest. Just Jeff Lowe is the worst example of small man syndrome I've seen for a very long time. He was about 5'4".
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like. Out of everybody, Doc Antles is something else, but Jeff Lowe was just like, absolutely in it for himself. Just an awful, awful human being.
I think he was a people trafficker, he was a sex trafficker, he's a drug dealer and trafficker, and bought cats because he was a fucking multi-millionaire because of all those things.
Yeah. Mags.
Okay. I was going to say, can we wrap up by each saying what our favourite moment is that we've not spoken about so far? Because there's so many fucking like amazing moments that we've still not got around to touch. So mine's, which Lizzie's kind of briefly mentioned already, but when he hired the guy who worked behind the counter in the ammo department of Walmart to be his campaign
manager. Yeah.
I was like, what? That was a proper, like, when you revealed that, I just, like, was lying on the floor laughing. That was so fucking funny.
And he was a true libertarian, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was something else, wasn't he? What was his name again? I've forgotten.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Joshua Dial.
Joshua Dial, yeah. That's it.
See, he's had to start...
It was the worst 18 months of his life. Yeah.
But it was his dream job, Max.
Yeah, target to campaign manager.
The poor guy has actually had to start a crowdfunding campaign to pay for the therapy he requires now, apparently. Max has stolen my absolute favourite bit was where we found out that his campaign manager, who started off by saying he was really excited because it was what he'd always wanted, like to be a campaign manager. I was like, wow, Joe's managed to find himself someone who's actually a politician. No, he just worked in Walmart. So my second favourite part, I mean, first of all the music videos, but the best one of them all is the music video for Here Kitty Kitty.
Oh God, yeah.
which is the song that he wrote about Carol feeding her husband the tiger. And, I took the opportunity to watch the entirety of that video on YouTube. So it's a 6-minute music video. There is one verse and two run through of the chorus, and a 4-minute intro in the middle where the lookalike of Carol Baskin just feeding meat through the bars. So, I mean, Joe's musical career is a big highlight for me.
Dave?
For me, it's anything or any scene that had Eric Carey in it.
Yes!
Eric Carey was my favourite person in this whole thing. He was
the head keeper.
Yeah, the guy with the long blonde hair.
Yeah.
Smoked the whole time. Just didn't matter what he was doing. There was one point he was filling up, like, he had a canister of petrol. And he's pouring petrol into another canister, going, "Don't do this at home, folks." And he's there smoking a big fucking fat joint. And I was like, well, this guy's my spirit animal. through and through, the best guy that worked at that zoo. Like,
I was good. Do you know, Dave? I was going to say exactly the same thing to, like, props to Eric, because yeah. Eric was just too busy being done with that shit for the whole time.
That's it. He was the only one that had a catchphrase. The other line that got me, and it was just one line, was Joe Exotic describing himself being as gay as a $3 bill. Brilliant.
I didn't understand that. Why is a $3 bill gay? Or is that the point?
No, it just means it's, well, I had to explain it to Charlotte as well, but it's like, it was the one was, it's as odd as a 10 by 9 bob note or something like that was the old saying. Right. So it just means odd, queer, gay. That was how it, yeah. Like, and obviously him saying it was fine.
He also came out with the classic, "I'm just freeballing here," which was within the first few minutes, when he meant that he was wearing no pants. And I was just like, do you know what? I was like, that is the moment I knew I was in already. Like, I'm just freeballing here. I'm a redneck with a mullet. I'm a gay redneck with a mullet. And I look after tigers. I'm just freeballing here.
It's everything you could ever dream of, isn't it?
His full catchphrase, or what he used to identify himself, I wrote it down earlier, was, oh, now I can't find it, a gay, gun-touting tiger lover with a mullet, or something along those lines. He used all of those words, because initially I was annoyed. I was like, why do they keep referring to his bloody sexuality? What's the relevance? But he was doing it himself. I can't even find it, but yeah, anyway.
Yeah, crazy. James, you got any moments?
Yeah, like, we touched on him a little bit, but James Garrettson, he was the one that had the wire throughout all this moment. But one moment I want to touch on is the jet ski.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. All of this. He's riding on this jet ski all the way through this. That was almost like it was almost like a victory march when you see.
It was quite gratuitous. Like,
yeah.
So he owns a jet ski hire company that flies on a jet ski, but obviously they never told you that.
No,
it's funny as fuck. Why the fuck is he on a jet ski?
fair dues.
What's your favourite moment, Kutch?
Yeah. every time Joe says Carol fucking Baskin. I think it just so many times. I don't know if there's a supercut of it, but Jesus, he hated that woman. He really hated that woman.
I think there's probably a lot of stuff that they can use from this documentary to try and do something about the ability to buy and shoot explosives in America.
Oh, gotcha.
It's like, oh yeah, this is the stuff that... The stuff that you can buy, and when you shoot it, it explodes. I'm like, right,
you
okay,
shouldn't really
gun,
be, yeah.
Why? Bullets, why? Explosives, why?
Yeah,
what
there's,
use is there for that?
Yeah, there's no requirement, but hey-ho, America, Merca.
When he blew up his bed so that Carol fucking
could take it. Yeah. That whole bit when he was just destroying everything he owned.
A broken man.
I think the good thing that we know is that there's another episode coming.
Yeah.
And
a follow-up by Discovery Networks all about Carol Baskin and whether or not she murdered Dawn.
How she definitely killed her husband.
And all in all, what's really great is despite everything that's gone on and everything that's been publicised, mm-hmm. you can still go to GW Zoo and pet the fucking tiger.
That is the thing, eh? fucking
it's not been shut down, nor has Kev Antlers. They're all still there doing exactly what they were doing before.
And they'll probably keep doing it for forever. Disgusting. Disgusting.
It's a fundamental right for an American man to shoot guns and own tigers, apparently.
Of course it is.
Right. Will we wrap this up then? Bring it all to a close?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Jamie, do you want to give me the...
What else did the socials?
Dave,
Jamie's in partnership with Carol fucking Baskin.
That's why he's not here. He's strongly opposed to it.
Not watched it in inverted commas.
That's the biggest crime of this whole thing.
Is that he's not watched it yet. I mean, what else have you got to do at the moment in time? So, Dave, go and give me the socials.
Get us on Facebook at Fife Club. Get us on Twitter at Fife Club. Get us on the other one at Fife Club. Go to Instagram and check out Fife Club. Go on to Google, type Fife Club in, and then hit enter. And then go onto our website, which is fifeclub.co.uk. You can maybe even find us on Bing. We're probably about six bits down underneath all the adverts for Fife Club, Fife Cub, Tiger Cubs, and Joe Exotic. But generally, we're on the internet, and if you want to, you can probably find us on there. I've tried a few times, and I've managed it once.
Oh, that's a great advert for my SEO skills. Anyway.
Or my typing ability.
Fifth Club. do that. I'm also thinking I'm going to open up a wee Facebook group and see if some super fans want to join it and maybe, you know, start interacting with us on a Fife Club group.
Don't
so
the Bailey comment on our stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm going to open the group and see what happens. See if anybody decides to join it and chat with us, and if they do, then hey, good times. If not,
we're going to have a mental fan, aren't we?
Yeah.
There's going to be one.
Yeah, somebody that will want to stab us. All of them. Right. I suppose it brings me to that time of the podcast where I have to ask, Elizabeth, what's the motto this week?
Dear lover, down there in love. Tell him that's a tiger.
Oh, that'll do.
Copyrighted.
No,
but ultimately, I saw a tiger, and the tiger saw a man.
Oh,
he did that, you know, he did that.
And if I'm honest, I cried at that point in the episode.
Oh, right, okay. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Night.
Wunderbar. James, what's your opinion? James, what's your opinion?
James moving Don's body around right now.
James, are you there? James.
Is this where we accidentally see James masturbate?
James.
If we all wave, you might get the message.
James.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Okay, right. I can't hear you.
Oh, I had a really good train of thought there and I've completely lost it after James watching James masturbate comment.
It's like the Libby video.
Someone give me a play-by-play.
Are you there?
We're talking about the Tiger King, James.
Oh, I wish I could remember what I was going to say. It was a really good comment.
James. Wait a minute. He's muted.
He is muted.
Yeah.
But he can't hear us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Carol Baskin.
Carol Baskin.
Send him to the Tigers. Carol Baskin.
They're vertical Carol fucking Baskins.
I've got messages of the listeners, and Mark has a giant blow up sex ball next to him, which he's punching repeatedly in the face. But it is wearing a flower crown.
What did you think of our new husband?
Like, so,
I thought he was a really weird, interesting character. And
I've got a question about him too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go.
It's fine. Well, we just jump on to the next one while we wait on James trying to. Yeah, right. Okay, then. Yes, Mark.
Can I go for a pee?
Yeah, you can.
So we never covered the fact that Joe's not thin in any of those videos.
Not one.
No.
He'd invite them, he didn't send them. He's just a really good lip-sync guy. But I love a bit of country music, and I've got me some more exotic songs to play about for that.
Fair dues. Well, that was quite good, guys. Thanks very much.
Yeah, good show.
Yeah. Sorry about my technical issues.
That's all right. Well, we'll edit them out or not.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys.
Right.
Bye.
Cheerio. Bye.
Catch you later.